Michigan may well have a very long history of building cars, of mining, logging, of agriculture. But there's something else that this state produces. Writers, fine writers. Anna Clark's new book explores the lives of some of Michigan's most notable writers. It's called Michigan Literary Luminaries, from Elmore Leonard to Robert Hayden. Welcome back to Statesides. Good to see you, Anna.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
We last talked to you about the Kalamazoo writing scene. You really love exploring Michigan's writers, don't you?
I do. I love it both as a reader and as a writer. It's there's just so much to discover and so many different kinds of writers here that it's kind of a story that doesn't end.
And you sort of bring us biographies, but you sort of don't. What are you trying to give us in these essays? Because it isn't just biography.
Right. When I began this project, I really wanted to make sure that it wasn't just stringing together extended Wikipedia entries that you could just find on the internet. You know,
a lot of these
writers have been written about quite a lot, mm-hmm. and their histories, their biographies are out there, you know? So I was thinking about, like, what can I do that provides something a little bit original to it? And so I think that piece was bringing in some original reportage and some literary analysis, like really engaging with the work that these writers produced, as well as the story of their lives.
And in the framework of Michigan.
Exactly.
And how it impacted them.
Yep.
Because it's amazing as you read through to realize how very directly linked to their lives in Michigan, whatever part of Michigan, some of these stories turn out to be.
Yeah.
Very thinly veiled, or not veiled at all.
I know. It's amazing. The writers in this book are they're really different from each other. You know, they're really producing different kinds of work at different eras throughout the, you know, past 115 years or so. And a lot of them are working in different corners of the state, whether it's up north or in the city or here in Ann Arbor or Kalamazoo. And I think that what's fascinating is to see how these writers are able to find the corners of the landscape that resonate with them. And, you know, they make a life as a writer out of that, you know, and I'm interested in both, you know, how they did that, you know, in their day-to-day experiences and also what that looks like on the page.
So tell us the writers you've chosen. I bet it was tough to decide who was going to make it and who wasn't, because we have so many good writers.
Absolutely. There's so many people that I wanted to include in this book that certainly deserve the spotlight. And I feel like there's, you know, 10 more books that could be written about them. But the writers that have the largest spotlights in this particular book are Ernest Hemingway up in the North Woods, Harriet Simpson Arno worked both in Detroit and mostly in Ann Arbor, Robert Hayden and Dudley Randall in Detroit, Joyce Carol Oates also in the city, Jim Harrison up north, Theodore Rutke grew up in Saginaw and also taught in Lansing and, you know, was all over the state a little bit, Elmore Leonard and Donald Goines, and Philip Levine.
What did you learn that surprised you as you researched and dug into where these people lived and how their writing was influenced by Michigan?
A lot of different things. I mean, on a most basic level, there are some writers that were new to me as a reader that I got to get to know as part of this book, like Harriet Simpson Arno, who I really fell in love with.
And we're going to talk about her because I hadn't heard of her either. So hold that thought about Harriet.
Sure.
Yeah. What other things?
Well, other things, too, I thought was kind of interesting, like Hemingway up north. That he's somebody, obviously, that has been very well – obviously, his work's very well known. And that's something, you know, his relationship with the whole area around Petoskey and Horton Bay is just it's just amazing. What was interesting – one of the questions that was interesting to me to discover was, why the northern part of the state, they took a while before they really embraced that Hemingway legacy.
There was foot dragging.
Yeah, there was.
Why was that?
I was very curious about it. Well, according to the president of the Michigan Hemingway Society up north, he says he speculates that it has to do with, like, two things. One, that for a long time it was still in living memory, and there's certain a little bit of Midwestern politeness. You know, it would be a little awkward to have a lecture on, say, how the mental illness impacted the Hemingway family when members of the Hemingway family are still there, you know? Mm-hmm. Also, you know, I think he speculated that the communities around there really wanted to center what they did well. Like, they're like, we're a wonderful town without famous people, even. You know, we don't need to rely upon that to be a place worth visiting.
Interesting, yeah. And you really take us. You've got family photos, and even through the whole book. I was really impressed with the level of photos of houses where people's parents moved when they first came to Michigan. So, where did you get all this information? And must have done a lot of digging.
Yeah, there was a little bit of hustle, and I did rely on a lot of help. There's some really talented photographers around the state who were generously contributed their work to this book to help make it really live. Mm-hmm. And other, you know, other resources is where the archival images at, for example, the Hemingway pictures came from the JFK Library in Boston. The Detroit Public Library had some resources. The Detroit News contributed a photo. You know what I mean? Just so I really did want to make sure that, like, the images were worthwhile.
I really felt, as I read these profiles, it makes them real. It isn't like Elmore Leonard, this, you know, world famous, literally world famous author. It's a guy who built a life and had struggles and had to schlep away at a job he didn't really love because he had to feed the family, and how he stole time to write and the house he lived in. Same with Joyce Carol Oates while she was teaching at the University of Detroit, my alma mater, by the way. So I knew the street where you showed where she lived. So it makes them real people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's, I mean, I'm a writer myself, so I have a bias here, but I am fascinated in seeing the different ways that writers are able to make this work, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, for amazingly talented people, you do not make a living out of this, at least right away, and maybe not ever, you know, no matter how good your work is. And so I think it's, like, fascinating to see, like, well, how do you fit this into your life when we have families, when we have rent to pay, when we have jobs, when we have, like, personal challenges. This is real life, you know. And for people in Michigan now who want to create literary communities, who want to become writers, I feel like there's something here that we can learn from.
In fact, let's talk a little about this little known writer, Harriet Simpson. Now, I had not heard of her, but now that I've read your profile, I want to read her work. This is someone who really was juggling many things and didn't get a lot of attention as she turned out some wonderful work.
Absolutely. She was one of my favorite discoveries for this book, and I have to give a nod to Amy Elliott Bragg, who wrote The Hidden History of Detroit. She's a friend of mine who learned I was doing this project and was like, you need to check out her, and she was right. Harriet Simpson Arnow, she was really well known in her time. She wrote best-selling novels. She was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize several times, but had the misfortune of writing right around the same time that Faulkner was, and so that's tough. You know? But she was somebody who came of age in Kentucky. She first came to Michigan when she was working as a waitress at a resort up north. And she was part of the migration here from the South in the last year of World War II. She and her husband moved to Detroit first. Her husband got a job as a crime reporter at the Detroit Times. Mm-hmm. And they eventually settled in Ann Arbor, where they lived the last many decades of their lives, on Nixon Road, a large 40 acres or so. You know, so she had a kind of a mix of urban and rural in her day-to-day life. And that shows up certainly in her books as well. So The Dollmaker is probably her best-known book. It was published in, I believe, 1954. Big seller in its time. It also had a bit of a revival in the early 80s when a television movie starring Jane Fonda aired.
I remember that.
I'd love to see this someday. I have not actually seen that. I would love to see that movie. But it's a fantastic book. It follows a woman who migrates north, you know, with her family, you know, during lives in a factory housing project at Flint's Motor Company. Mm-hmm. And what unfolds is this, like, you know, really powerful story that shows this, like, ensemble of this alleyway of the children of people who come from all these different kinds of backgrounds, of, like, the simultaneous, like, fear of remaining in this really challenging, you know, impoverished, indebted, you know, community, but also, like, fearful of the war ending and losing jobs and not having even that. And, you know, how people are trying to negotiate individuality in places where adjust is the mode of advice. You know, I mean, it's just a wonderful book. She also wrote Hunter's Horn, a number of other things that are really great. And she's fantastic. I hope more people read her.
Was she the one that had to submit some things as H.S. Arnold? Because, my goodness,
did.
We can't take a woman's writing.
Oh, my goodness. This was true. This was Esquire magazine, which did not even let women submit. You could not even submit a story. It wasn't just a byline gap that we talk about sometimes now. It was like, we will not publish you. So she published under her initials. They accepted. They wanted an author photo, so she used, like, her brother-in-law or something like that. Just submitted
good for
their photo
her.
And cashed a very hefty check for it. So, yeah, good for her indeed.
Last laugh, right?
Exactly.
What do you hope your readers will get from these essays in Michigan Literary Luminaries, Anna?
I hope, first of all, they get a lengthy reading list. I certainly think getting to know these writers through their own work is the best way to do it, more than my book. Also, I hope it helps us think about what kind of writers we want to be, or even if we're not writers ourselves, what it takes to like cultivate a literary culture, whether we're in small town Traverse City or whether we're in the heart of Detroit. Like, what does it take to create communities where the literary arts thrive? That is something that I would love to see for the future of Michigan.
You will get a lot of reading ideas. I know my reading list got very, very long from going through this. It's really beautifully done. Michigan Literary Luminaries, from Elmore Leonard to Robert Hayden, by my guest Anna Clark. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.